Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, Sean Bajani, Wade Smith in this afternoon for Clint Stoerner and the show. Time for 5 o'clock fire. First up, 9 more NBA players have tested positive for COVID, bringing the total to 25. The 9 positive tests were found between June 24th and 29th. And now it's at 25. That's out of a pool of 351, Wade, that have been tested since June 23rd. They still got a week out before they start their training camp, which is set for July 9th through the 29th in their season to begin, their rebooted version at July 30th. So still a little ways to go. Still sketchy territory for the NBA.
Yeah, they still got a little bit of time to get everybody healthy and inside of the bubble. But it's almost going to be a crapshoot, man. You got to hope that any of these, because they didn't release the names of these 9 guys that tested positive, but
I guess they learned that with Rudy Gobert.
Right. We'll learn. It'll come out. It'll trickle out here and there. But if these are significant players on rosters, it can affect things dramatically of what's going to happen in this abbreviated season. Yeah, think about it like this. Coronavirus doesn't necessarily go out of your system in the 2 weeks that they say. That's kind of a median time that it happens. But it'll be in your system sometimes for 3-4 weeks. We heard a Major League Baseball coach talking about it took him 30 days to test clear of the coronavirus. So these guys that have it right now, you're hoping and praying that they can get cleared before they get into the bubble, because yeah, if they're not cleared, they're not going to allow them in, and that could affect wins and losses for the upcoming season.
I'm going to play like sports science guy, like team nutrition guy real quick.
Yeah.
This is just from what my 37 years on this planet, what I've kind of gathered, and it's happened to me before as well. Like, you having made that point, and it's an excellent point about the virus living in you still, and teams across sports have to be wary of this. Like, all right, if a guy gets it, is quarantined, cleared to come back, tested negative, good to go, the virus is still in you. What happens during that quarantine period, or even the time that you're allowed back, and you've put your body through, the rigors of a sport, NFL, NBA, MLB, whatever it is, but you're not eating the right way. Your immune system is weakened. The virus comes back and you don't know. And therefore you've contaminated other players on your team or the facility or whatever. Like, this is a part of the reason why I think it's not going to be as easy as, all right, we're going to wait to start on this day. And then if everybody's cleared on the day that we're supposed to start, good. That's not where it ends, man. This thing could be an absolute mess for months and months.
Yeah, you could very well be right about that. I don't know if there's been any examples that you can point to where it did happen that way, where somebody was cleared after,
not yet,
a
because
weeks,
nobody's played anything.
Right.
You don't know
how the body is going to react. So that's an unknown.
You know how you can overtrain your body. I mean, it can happen to anybody. You overtrain your body, your immune system is weakened, and you're vulnerable to all kinds of things.
That is a possibility. But one thing that I learned playing in the league is you can't chase ghosts. And every possible scenario can be vetted and run through, but eventually you got to put the ball down and go and play. And then if something happens, then you respond accordingly. But there will be no 100% foolproof way of playing sports or just living life today.
Yeah.
Like, there is no guarantees. And that's a part of life. We can go outside today and walk out the building and something can happen to you. You know what I mean? You never know. So you do your best that you can to eliminate as much risk as possible. And if something happens negatively, you respond to it and move forward.
5 o'clock fire.
So this news from the NFL, according to sources, NFL camps are likely to have fewer players. One source said, quote, definitely not 90. One source said he believed it's likely the teams will go to camp with an 80-man roster. And some sources even said they heard 75. So this is going to continue to affect the NFL as the days progress, Wade. You know, look, in particular with the Houston Texans this year and the roster that they have formed and put together at this point, how concerned are you at this point that if rosters are not 90, not even 80, but limited to 75 going forward, what that means for this team?
Well, I'm not concerned for what it means for the team. I'm more concerned of what it means to those guys that are the 90 through the 75th spot that they won't have an opportunity to make a team.
Yeah,
good point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because when you look at it from the perspective, if you're a veteran on the team, there's 40 guys, 50 guys, there's like 45 guys that you know are going to be on the roster. Mm-hmm. And then everybody else, the you know, 45 through 90 is battling to get those last, you know, eight or so spots. And that's why you have training camp to fill out your roster, but also to get everybody ready to play. As long as you're getting everybody ready to play, the ones that are going to be there, I don't think it affects the roster, but it does affect those players and those opportunities to have that Cinderella camp story.
Yeah.
I think about guys, yeah, you know, those undrafted free agents that pop up out of nowhere and have extreme success. That's going to be, the chances of that happening is going to be minimized. And so that's unfortunate, but I would be interested to see what they do with those players, the player 75 through 90 that was supposed to be on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do they do with those guys in the meantime since they're not taking a camp? Are they just going to cut these guys and they're going to be on the street? Like, I don't know. But,
well, I think a way to kind of, I guess, figure that out to some extent, you know, to get some of those players on board. The NFL says it's also considering expanding its practice squads to 16 to 20 players in the event of the coronavirus outbreak. If there were one, teams would have a deeper stash of players to activate to play games. So you're looking at, you know, what, practice squad right now consists of 10?
It used to be eight.
Maybe they bumped it up to 10 in recent years.
Somewhere,
so maybe
there,
going up to 16 to as many as 20, that could be a thing. Next up on
5 o'clock fire.
5 o'clock fire. The NFL is planning to play the Black National Anthem before week one games. This, according to sources, and of course, look, you and I talked earlier about this. The Houston Texans and Kansas City Chiefs, they play the season opener as scheduled for September 10th. All eyes already going to be on that game. This is something the NFL is looking at doing, the Black National Anthem called Lift Every Voice and Sing. Is this something that the NFL is hitting spot on? What do you make of this possible decision to go ahead and do this before every week one game?
I would say it's extremely surprising. I think there's an opportunity there for this to be kind of a unifying thing. It can also be something that's divisive as well. But I will say this, the chances of African-American NFL players listening to the Black National Anthem and then kneeling directly after when they play the Star Spangled Banner, I think that number minimizes tremendously because you're putting that gesture forward that's saying, we recognize you. It almost kills two birds with one stone. The whole reason why players were kneeling anyway was to bring awareness to police brutality and the killing of unarmed black and brown people. So if you're playing the Black National Anthem before NFL games, something that's never been done before, that's bringing awareness to it. And then it also, like I said, it could be a great opportunity to unify this country. And so I think it's a good idea.
You know, I could be totally wrong on this, but I wouldn't be surprised if this story right here about the NFL exploring the option of playing the Black National Anthem before week one games didn't spawn from something that was discussed on that NFLPA call earlier today, or maybe leaked before that it was going to be discussed. There's that too. I think you brought up an excellent point. You and I are on 100% the same page. When you said this could be divisive as well, if they played this song before the national anthem, you're going to have the Black National Anthem play and then the national anthem play. How many players are going to kneel during that thing? This could be an effort 100% to unify all players, but not just players. The message now that the NFL is able to take, if they decide to go forward with this, and they have the full backing of the owners and the players here, now it is time to have the fans and the media understand what's going on here. And it's going to be really important for the right people to say the right things about why this decision was made. I think the intentions behind this are 100% in good faith. I think if it's well thought out, this could be a great, great thing, not just for the NFL, but let's be honest, for society right now going forward with everything it's going through.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there when you say that this is something that potentially could have came out of the call with NFLPA, because you got to look at it from this perspective. The whole idea of kneeling during the national anthem was a tactic that was used to bring awareness, right? And of course, the owners, and there's a lot of fans that did not appreciate that one bit. And so they're trying to figure out ways that you can get your message across, but also not offend anyone, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you can get your message across and then also be unified at the same time, this is a tactic that we can use, that the players will say, you know what, if you guys can do this and recognize the situation of what's going on in this way, then guys will not kneel during the anthem. And we're going to go forward and we're going to appreciate this country, because contrary to popular belief, these guys that are kneeling don't hate the country. That's a narrative that was put out there. But it was like, this is a tactic that we're going to use to bring awareness to a situation. So showing that, hey, we love this country, but we want this country to do better. I think by doing this is a way to bridge that and unify the nation.
Yes.
There's going to be always people that are going to want the nation to be divided and figure out ways to divide it.
Sure.
And so there's going to be people that put that negative thing out there. But like you said, if the right people can communicate it in the right way and enough people hear it, then it'll be a beneficial deal all the way around.
I'm just extremely encouraged right now. And I feel really good about what the NFL is doing. If they do make this decision final to play the Black National Anthem before all Week 1 games, I just think that's the way to go. But, they do have to start sending that message and send it the right way. And it's going to take time. And the fact that, look, the NFL season before it starts, we've got a little ways to go and a lot could happen between now and then. Mm-hmm. They can put their heads together and figure out the best possible and most effective and efficient way to do that.
And listen, a lot of people don't even know that the Black National Anthem exists. And so it's going to be an educational opportunity to see why it even came to place. This was hundreds of years ago when it first, or maybe like maybe 60, 70 years ago. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was. It's been a while back since it came to fruition. Mm-hmm. Without Googling, it's around the civil rights movement and maybe a little bit before then, 50s, 40s, 60s, somewhere around that. But it's been around for a very, very long time. In my entire life, it's been existing, but a lot of people don't know about it and know how it came to be.
Yeah.
And they kind of understand the meaning behind it. And it might be a way to, like I said, unify the nation.
100%. He's Wade Smith, Sean Bajani in for Clint Sterner. And the show coming up next, Cam Newton's a Patriot. I think only one guy stands to lose in this whole deal if it doesn't work. We'll talk about it next. It's Sports Radio 610. Sean Bajani and Wade Smith and for Clint Sterner and the show. Welcome in. It's Sports Radio 610. If you'd like to get involved in the conversation, 713-572-4610, 572-4610. You can call or text. So Cam Newton's a Patriot.
He is.
I know over the course of the past week there have been a ton of different angles and storylines surrounding that signing by the Patriots. The one thing that I still feel like people forget, and it's because Tom Brady is removed from the equation now that he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. It's weird. I'm probably going to screw that one up at some point this NFL season. But I think what people forget is that Bill Belichick is still there.
He is.
And, I know there's the arguments and the questions that we can have, and I'll even ask them this segment. We can kick those around for days probably. Who stands more to lose and gain when it's Brady and Belichick and breaking that relationship up? And are the Patriots going to be you know, even close to being considered contenders without Tom Brady. This is what we play an NFL season for. And I think, honestly, deep inside of a lot of people out there, a lot of NFL fans that aren't diehard Patriot fans, you've been wanting to see this. And you should thank your lucky stars that you get a chance to see this in your lifetime. This storyline play out of whether or not it's Bill Belichick or it's Tom Brady, or was it both of them together that made the New England Patriots? I think you're forgetting that if you ever doubt Bill Belichick, you're wrong.
Listen, I tweeted this 3 days ago. As long as the hooded one is there, the Patriots will never go away. Never. It's not happening.
You're 100%.
You could try to put him, bury him and put him out their misery. As long as Belichick is there, he's going to make the moves that need to be made to give them a chance to compete. Mm-hmm. He's always the smartest guy in the room. So that means he's going to have a chance to compete. Now, they have issues with personnel at certain position groups, tight ends. They lost some guys on defense. They only really have one receiver. They're going to struggle from that aspect as far as just talent level. But his coaching, the fact that their culture has been built on winning and everyone buys in that's there, they understand what it takes, that's going to allow them to be competitive. You put a guy like Cam Newton into that equation, a guy that has so much to prove, chip on his shoulder, he's going to come in there, and if healthy, he's going to play at a very, very high level. He's going to improve as a player. Being around Bill Belichick and being around that culture, he's going to learn more in this season than he's learned in probably the previous three or four, maybe his entire career. And so that's going to pay dividends when they play. It's going to be very, very difficult to kill them as long as the hooded one is there. So, like, you're right. People have been wanting to see the – I'm tired of talking about the Patriots and them being a contender. But as long as he's there – they're going to figure out a way, because they're always ahead of the curve on trying to figure out ways to maneuver players around, getting guys to buy in and take less money to come there. And a lot of that had to do with Tom Brady. But listen, you get rid of Tom Brady, you let him go, and you bring in another superstar quarterback. He hasn't played like it in the last couple of years because he's been injured. But just imagine what happens if Cam Newton comes out here and has a Cam Newton-like season.
Yeah.
Not MVP-like season, but he has a season to where he plays at a high level. They're still going to be able to make that same pitch and that same sale to any other guy that comes into the organization, pay Cam Newton, and he's going to be there for, you know, multiple years. Or they're going to take Cam Newton, he plays well, flip him for a draft pick, and use that to improve their roster in that way. Any way you slice it, Bill Belichick is going to find a way to make his team compete.
I think we've seen this before a number of times with the New England Patriots, where they've gone out and they've taken a guy, whether it be one of questionable character or a tougher personality to deal with, somebody with baggage, let's just put it in those terms, and they've created a success story. I mean, you go all the way back to Randy Moss when that experiment occurred. What year was that? I want to say it was
2007 or 8.
I was going to say 2011. I could be wrong.
It was 2011. That was the year that they went 16 or 18 and 0, and then they lost.
They lost to the Giants, right?
Yeah,
that was the David Tyree catch, wasn't it?
That was
the year.
2011.
It was sticking out of my mind for some reason. Bubblegum, David Tyree. You know, I was thinking that SNL skit. That's how I remember those things.
But they were still in my mind. They were still beatable, and they ended up getting beat by New York. But
Randy Moss put together one of the best seasons he's ever had in his entire career. You know, Marshawn Lynch. I mean, you could go on and on, you know, with the number of players they brought in that have, you know, and even without baggage, just Jags, just another guy they bring in, and all of a sudden they put that individual on the map. You know, they've kind of been there and done that. And look, it was going to happen at some point with the Brady and Belichick divorce, whether it be one or the other retired. I just think this is something that we should all be like on the edges of our seat waiting to see, because Brady's still playing with another organization. Belichick's still with the organization. You get to see two different storylines play out here, and really a third since you add Cam to the conversation now. And I think, look, if to get back to the original question, you know, if only one guy stands to lose if it doesn't work, who that's going to be, it's not going to be Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick has his five Super Bowls. Bill Belichick has cemented his place in history. Now, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, think he's not going to ever rest until he's considered the very best, and that's over, you know, the greatest of the greats. You know, Paul Brown, Don Shula, just the Lombardi, the greatest coaches ever. He's on the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
And I think he's probably pretty content with that. But I think those five Super Bowls, you know, kind of help him in that regard. But if there's one guy that could lose, it is Cam Newton. And his Instagram post the other day, while it might not strike fear in the rest of the NFL until games are actually played, I mean, you got to think about it a little bit, because a guy that flat out just comes out and says, look, this team gave up on me, this team wants me, and I've got a chip on my shoulder. I've got, you know, more to prove than just how much money I can make. It's about one word, respect. And that's what he can do this year.
I think the thing about Cam Newton, though, is this. A lot of people wrote him off. They figured that, you know, his style of play is not going to allow him to play at a high level anymore.
A lot of people wrote him off after the fumble in the Super Bowl.
A lot of people write him off of his interview after the Super Bowl because he was a sore loser type of stuff. There's a lot of reasons. Listen, Cam Newton is a guy that is a lightning rod for controversy and hate. You know what I mean? The fact that he gets dressed up the way he gets dressed up, the amount of bravado he has, swagger he has, and the fact that he really hasn't backed it up in the last couple of years because of his injuries, and his play has reflected that, he's an easy target. And so when somebody tells you you can't and you say, all right, just wait and see, you do have a lot on the plate. You do have a lot to lose. The thing about Cam Newton is, though, he's a guy that his entire life has beaten the odds. He's the type of guy that he's one of those guys that reminds me of like Floyd Mayweather, that he's not going to allow himself to fail because he cares too much about what will be said about him if he does fail. He's going to figure out a way to succeed. And so that's what I fully expect from Cam Newton. He has the perfect scenario that he's in. The only thing he would probably want more is maybe one more receiver and a tight end he can get the ball to. But when you talk about the season has not started, and they can figure out, like, you talk about one organization that I have no doubt in my mind that they can figure out a way to get a tight end. They could go to Tampa and trade for one of those guys that one of those extra tight ends that the Tampa has on their roster right now. They got Brate, they got Howard, and they got Gronk, of course. They don't need all three of those guys.
Right.
They could, the Patriots could trade and get Cameron Brate, or trade and get O.J. Howard, and then they're good at the tight end position. They would be the type of organization that would be willing to do that. They're going to put the pieces around. That's why it was really surprising last year that they did what they did with Brady, because he didn't have the weapons around him, but they didn't expect Rob Gronkowski to retire. That was something that they didn't foresee. It caught them off guard. They got caught with their pants down, and that's why they struggled so much offensively last year. But yet they were still in the playoffs. They still had the number one defense in the league. So they're going to always compete as long as Belichick is there. And Belichick was the type of guy that before he went to New England, he had playoff teams in Cleveland. We're talking about Cleveland now. He had a playoff team in Cleveland.
I know. Was that like the last time the Browns have ever felt confident in a playoff team is when Belichick coached them?
How many Super Bowls does he have? He's not just as a head coach. He's had Super Bowls as a New York Giant, like as a defense coordinator. That guy is going to find a way. And so Cam Newton has a perfect opportunity to take advantage of all the wealth of knowledge that he'll be able to impart into him. And I'm looking forward to see what happens this year with the New England Patriots. Even though I don't want them to be successful, I do want to see Cam be successful, because at one point he was the best in the league.
Yeah, no, and I'm on board with everything that you say. And I thought you brought up a really good point earlier that I just kind of want to hammer home, is that, look, he might at the end of this season say that he's never learned more in his football career than being with Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots. There's that. You and I, before the show started, you know, kind of were making fun of him a little bit about his wardrobe and how he handles press conferences and things like that. That's one avenue in which Cam Newton is not really – he's evolved, but he's become a little bit more out there as the years have gone on, right? He's become very comfortable with being himself.
Yeah.
And he's going to do what he wants to do and how he wants to do it in his press conference. That's the one avenue in which I could see those two guys butting heads, maybe, but – how many times do we have the discussion of right time, right place, right fit for a quarterback. Can you draw it up any better than right now with Cam Newton at the stage that he is in his career and at the place that the Patriots were with their scenario with Brian Hoyer as a backup, quote unquote, and Jared Stidham as the penciled in starter, like the dude that nobody's giving any credit to that could be pretty good, but probably not. That's why you go out and get Cam Newton.
Yeah.
You know, Bill Belichick's not at the stage of his career, five Super Bowls or not, all the accolades, whatever, to just throw his hands up, throw in the towel and say, well, we're going to see what we can do here with Jared Stidham and Brian Hoyer. No, you've been there, done that. You're going to go out and try to get the very best dude that could fit and make waves and win ball games.
Yeah, they're going to try to figure out a way to win. You brought in a guy like Cam Newton that has a proven track record. You put him in your system, you see what happens, and it's no risk for them. I think his guaranteed money is like $500,000. And you know,
he can earn up to $7.5 million.
He can earn up to $7.5 million, but the guaranteed money he has is only like $500,000.
He'll earn every
That's
penny
peanuts
of that.
For them. Yeah, so they have no risk in this deal. He's going to buy into the Patriot way because they're not going to change. They're going to be who they are. He knows that it's successful. He wants to win. That's the thing that they have going for them that no other franchise can say over the past 20 years, that we consistently, year in and year out, are going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And if you come here and you do it our way, you're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And it's believable. And, and the evidence is there. It's tried and true. And so that's why they get the best out of veteran players that come in there.
He's Wade Smith, Sean Bajani in for Clint Sterner. And the show coming up next, Major League Baseball Commissioner Robert Manfred. Yeah, he's really bad at his job right now. And Wade Smith thinks a grievance is coming from the Players Association. I'll tell you why next. It's Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610. Breaking news. Powered by Radio.com Sports. Brought to you by the Dell Technologies Small Business Podference. Go listen at Radio.com/Dell.
God, I got to get used to that sound, I guess. I literally just dropped everything. It scared me. A little breaking news. Sean Bajani, Wade Smith in for Clint Sterner and the show. So before we get to a little baseball convo, we've got some breaking news at this hour in regards to the Washington Redskins and a possible name change. You think it's already a done deal, Wade. I'll tell you why Wade thinks that. According to reports, FedEx has asked the Washington Redskins to change the team name amid pushback from investors. Now, along with FedEx, Nike, and PepsiCo, those investment firms have a combined worth of $620 billion. They are heavily into the Washington Redskins, and there have been investment firms, let me reset this. The request came one day after Adweek had reported that a group of 87 investment firms had sent letters to these three team sponsors, as I mentioned, FedEx, Nike, and PepsiCo. In the letters, the companies were asked to pressure Washington team officials to change the name to cut ties with the organization if it did not comply. This has been an ongoing thing, Wade, since as far back as I can remember, really, and I've been doing radio here since 2006 and 2009 on a full-time basis. And I remember in 2009 this being an issue.
Yeah.
So it's kind of grown and grown and grown as the years have gone on. You think it's pretty much a done deal just given the wealth of the companies that are involved in this thing.
Listen, man, money talks. This is America and business is business. And if FedEx, the title sponsor of your stadium, of your FedEx Field is the name of the place that they play all of their games. Yeah. And if FedEx is telling me, hey, y'all need to change the name or else, that's going to move the needle. And you mentioned you said Nike, FedEx.
Yes, and PepsiCo.
PepsiCo, and you said $600 billion, right?
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. Money talks. There's going to be a new name. I don't know if it's going to be the Red Storm. I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be the Washington something else. Just start the clock. It's going to change. And like you said, people will hear this and say, oh, here we go, another thing where because of what's going on nowadays in 2020. This has been going on since when I was playing in the league, when I was playing for the Miami Dolphins. People were complaining about the name of this franchise. I was playing for the Miami Dolphins from 2003 to 2006. So this is a long, long time ago. And so it's come to a point where, like, all right, a lot of stuff that people have been complaining about for a long time and been trying to get changed. This is the time and this is the climate that is actually going to happen. And when your major sponsors like that get involved and say, hey, y'all need to figure this out and get this change, because our people that are the people that support our organizations are asking for us to do this, it's going to get done.
A couple other specs that you probably should know about in regards to this story. Of course, the representatives from the Washington Redskins did not immediately reply with a response given the pressure now applied by FedEx. Also, back in 1999, FedEx became the naming rights partner for where the Redskins home stadium is now. That was a 27-year deal then in 1999. So you're approaching year 21 of that 27-year deal at this point. There could be some negotiation tactics here. I mean, you're with the way things are right now in these times, it needs to get done, and it needs to get done now. That's the mentality of a lot of people out there. But with 6 years sparing on this naming rights partnership, I wouldn't be surprised if that deal is redone, and that deal was worth just over $200 million. So there could be a lot of moving parts here.
Listen, there's no way that Dan Snyder is not going to figure out a way to leverage this to get more money out of FedEx and his sponsors in order for him to change the name.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, it's business. And so if you're telling me you're going to pull out, Or if I don't change the name, I'm going to figure out a way. It's like, all right, if you're going to pull out, if you want me to make this change, and I'm going to come up with every reason why I want to keep it the same and show how much value that name has in our brand, you're going to have to pay for me to do it. That's what's going to end up happening here. It just makes too much sense. If it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. This makes too much sense. I don't know what the name's going to be. They got to make it dope. They got to make it, you know, it's got to pop, but the Redskins are not going to be the name of the team in Washington for very much longer. These $600 billion, that just explains it all.
Yeah, there's a couple other texters that says, I think maybe it should change, but it's got to be a cool name change and not a dumb name change for politics. Another texter says, there's still other investors that don't give a damn if the name is changed or not. Let all those, I'm guessing, investors get the, well, sorry, texter, and you kind of
I
your words there. I
think
it's
what
that.
He's saying that, you know, maybe other investors would step up and get the naming rights. But
I was going to say
this,
the same
in this
thing.
In this climate right now, if FedEx were to pull out and say, you know what, we're not going to deal with Washington anymore because they wouldn't change the name. The investor that came in after that and put their name on it and it kept it the same. You know how much backlash they would have to deal with,
sure,
and how much money they would lose
across all of their business ventures, worldwide.
No question about
it. Is it going to be worth
it? It's not smart business.
It's not smart business. I agree with you there. I mean, think about this: like, how many other companies that would be interested in naming rights for an NFL stadium are bigger than Nike, FedEx, and PepsiCo?
Not many.
With a net worth of $620 billion combined. $620 billion combined. You're right. Who else are you going to find? First world problems, not ours. It's definitely going to be a fluid situation now as this thing picks up steam and you've gotten one of the big dogs on board in FedEx.
You don't call them the Washington dividers. It reflects what goes on with the politics in that city, man.
Right.
The Washington dividers.
Or, you know, oxymoron, the Washington bipartisans. Please. What are you talking about? All right, so let's switch gears to a little baseball. I wanted to get to this all day long. You had this in mind. You think there's a grievance coming from the Major League Baseball Players Association in retaliation from the way that Robert Manfred's handled this entire 3.5-month fiasco, which they've seemingly got under control to this point. They've got a date set. Spring training is going to start, a reboot tomorrow in team facilities. Astros are going to have workouts. You'll hear from Lance McCullers and a couple other guys tomorrow. That'll probably be talked about quite a bit, but why do you think the Players Association is going to have a grievance coming Manfred's way?
Well, just listen to what Rob has to say. You listen to this, and then I'll tell you why there's going to be a grievance.
Some people have talked about longer seasons, 62 short. The reality is, we weren't going to play more than 60 games, no matter how the negotiation with the players went or any other factor. 60 games is the outside of the envelope, given the realities of the virus. And, you know, I think this is the one thing that we come back to every single day. we're trying to manage something that has proven to be unpredictable and unmanageable. I know it hasn't looked particularly pretty in spots, but having said that, if we can pull off this 60-game season, I think it was the best we were going to do for our fans, given the course of the virus.
So the first thing that comes out of his mouth is, despite all of these negotiations, 60 games is what it was going to be. Well, their initial agreement said that they have to figure out each and every possible remedy to play as many games as possible. If you have 60 games stuck on your mind that that's what it's going to be, then you weren't working in good faith to try to play as many games as possible. The Major League Baseball Players Association put out 114 games. There was an 80-game proposal. There's all these different proposals that was more than 60 games, and the owners balked at it every time. Well, they agreed on the 60 games eventually, but they gave themselves the out that we can file a grievance if it's shown that you guys didn't negotiate in good faith.
Yeah.
Well, Rob just gave them the grievance right there. It was never going to be anything else except this 60 games. So that means to me that I don't know how many days it's going to take, but in a very short time span, as soon as they have the first available opportunity to file their grievance, they're going to, because there's no way you can tell me that Rob Manfred didn't just give away the keys to the kingdom by saying what he said.
Yeah, and this is going to be an absolute mess if it gets to that point, and it probably will with their collective bargaining agreement expiring soon. They're going to be entering in negotiations. That's why all along I felt like this had to get done. There has to be baseball. No matter what, there has to be baseball, because if there's baseball played in 2020, that does nothing but just at least show in good faith both sides are willing to compromise and reach some agreement there. That, in my opinion, would lend to at least some bit of confidence that they could come to an agreement on a new CBA down the road in 2021. The worst part of this whole thing is now I think we have to admit that Trevor Bauer was right all along.
I mean, Trevor Bauer, he's off the wall, and he says some stuff that's pretty dumb. But a lot of times when it comes to growing the game and the marketability of Major League Baseball and some of the stuff he complains about how things are done in Major League Baseball, he's spot on about a lot of that stuff.
I think he was spot on this.
And he's definitely spot on this.
If people are talking about like, hey, Bajani, what do you mean Trevor Bauer is right? What do you mean? Well, back on June 15th, Trevor Bauer went on a Twitter tirade after Robert Manfred's quote had come out that he was 100% sure that baseball would start, and then he went back on his word. This is
the next day.
The next day.
The next day.
Not even a full day. Not even a full 24 hours. This is from Trevor Bauer back on June 15th. So, Rob, explain to us how you can be 100% sure that there's going to be baseball, but not confident there will be baseball at the same time. Hmm? What changed between those statements? Players told you to set the season, but it's too early to set the season right now, isn't it, Rob? Because then you'd have to explain why you're only going to impose 50 games when we could easily play 70-plus right now. The tactic is to bluff with no season again and delay another 2.5 weeks until you clear the risk of not negotiating in good faith by trying to play as many games as possible. The public backlash combined with potential of having to explain yourself in front of an arbitrator isn't too appealing, is it? Let's see. The way I have it figured, you want to play between 50 and 60 games, can't make it 50 because that would be too obvious to everyone what you were trying to do, and no one would think that was a representative season, so you'd risk not getting your precious playoff money. Nope, can't have that, so gotta make it more than that, but not too many. You've got as high as about 55 games, and it goes on. But he's right.
Yeah.
Trevor Bauer, I hate to admit it, was spot on right. And I saw this tweet as it came out. And I'm like, man, this dude sounds like he knows what's going on. Like, he's got his connections. He's got his pipelines. This is his way of, like, leaking information to the public of what's really happening here. I mean, there was just too much detail there. And the thought behind it was spot on after the fact that we already know how this has transpired now.
And then Rob Manfred just confirmed it all. In an interview with, who was that, Dan Patrick that he was talking to?
I believe so, yeah.
I mean, like, come on, Rob. You are the commissioner of the league. Your job is to grow the game and put the best product out there on the field. Now, he eventually got the deal done that needed to get done for his owners, but he also opened himself up for the grievance by saying what he said. Like, there was already evidence showing that the owners weren't negotiating in good faith prior to him making the statement. He has this to it that just solidifies it. And so a grievance is coming. The players, like, baseball is going to have this season, and then they got the CBA negotiation coming up in 2021. Like, listen, man, I don't know what's going to happen with the sport. I don't know if we're going to have a full baseball season anytime in the near future. You don't know when it's going to transpire. So they've got to figure out somebody different in leadership position, Rob Manfred. I thought he was I wouldn't have put him in the category of the way that I might have felt about Roger Goodell a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. But he surpassed Roger Goodell in being just incompetent at his job. No finesse, no hustle, no nothing. Like, why would you say that?
I really liked Robert Manfred when he first got to be commissioner. I mean, there wasn't much he needed to do and was doing at the time because it would have been very hasty. He let it kind of marinate a little bit, and they really started trying to grow the game in terms of, like, pace of play and improve the replay. So I like a lot of those things. I liked a lot of the ideas that he had that he was going to implement and did implement in minor league baseball to further improve the pace of play, to kind of not appease me because, look, baseball's baseball. It's a slower-paced game. It is what it is, but
You're a purist.
I'm a purist, but if it appeals the masses and you don't change the game too much, if you need to have a clock, cool. If you need to have a minimum on relief pitchers, cool, because that did get to be a little bit much sometimes.
Yeah.
But when they started floating the ideas of these stupid, crazy, you know, expanded playoff and weird mid-season
starting
tournaments.
Starting the guys at second base.
Which is what they're going to do.
Yeah.
They're going to do, and there's a lot of really good baseball people out there that I like, I know, and I respect that are on board with that and that think it could be fun. I need to wait and see it, but I think it's horse crap.
It's gimmicky.
And that's the kind of stuff that I don't like about Rob Manfred. I should have seen it when that mess started happening. And now with this whole ordeal, I'm not going to say like it's absolutely time to go. It's time to go when you think you can implement this stuff for the game and it's going to make it better. You know, these drastic changes and expansion of the playoffs, like that's where I draw the line. Don't mess with my game too much.
I'm a big fan of you trying to figure out ways to grow your game. That's something that is severely needed in the game of baseball. I like the idea of them trying to come up with scenarios that more people that I come across on a day-to-day basis will be enjoying the sport that I enjoy. You love to have conversations and be able to talk ball with just random people or people that you're close to, right? But if the game is not interesting, if the game is not fun, if the game is not accessible, then you're not gonna have that going for you. So I applaud the effort, but there needs to be a little bit more a thought behind it and understand that you don't want to ruin what you have going for you in the process of it.
It's like he has his marketing guy, you know, working with him on ideas how to make the game better. Like the marketing guy clearly has stunk at his job for however many
it's
years.
It's the same guy that's been doing it for Major League Baseball for the past 20 years. And now that's going to be the guy to come up with all the ideas to make the game more exciting.
Yeah. I feel like that guy's like, 75 years old with a spit cup and like Coke bottle glasses that's still stuck in like the
1960s. You know what we should do? I know what we should do. This will get them. Yeah. Everybody will like this one right here. I mean, this will
get them.
It's not working out right, and it's not working out for Rob Manfred because he does things like he says one day it's 100% we're going to play. The next day, I'm not so sure. After the whole deal is done and the deal has been signed, you don't need to talk about the deal anymore. Mm-hmm. You come out and say it was never going to be anything more than 60 games. Hey, good luck with that when it comes up to re-up for your job, bro, because that's bad ball, bad look all the way around for Major League Baseball.
Wade, you'll be in again tomorrow, but not in this time slot,
yeah,
right?
I'll be in tomorrow from 8 till 1.
Oh, yeah, you got so 8 to 1, and then myself and Cecil Shorts, the third, have 1 to 6. So.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun tomorrow. Great job today. Enjoyed it. Had a lot of fun. Thank you to our producer, Bridget Falcone. I will call him the assistant, maybe even executive producer today, and Tyler Milner. He did a great job of helping us prep last night and this morning for Wade Smith. I'm Sean Bajani. Have a great rest of your evening.
When I wake up in the morning, love,
sit back, pull up some yak, indulge in a cigar.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.